Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sheila Shoiga, and welcome to Ready to Be Real Conversations, the podcast series where I chat to people of all walks of life. Some names you'll recognise, others you might not, but my hope is that these conversations will at times inspire, challenge, educate, comfort, or simply entertain you. This week, I speak to life coach Mark Fennell.
The perfectionist kind of lives in a lot of us, right? Mm-hmm. And it's either perfect or it's a fail. It's like what we call in psychology, it's called the term black and white thinking.
Yeah, rather than the middle ground.
So there's no middle. It's either right or it's wrong. Or if it's right, you'll find what's wrong. You know, so we have that. And to avoid failure or getting it wrong, we will go with the sure bet. You know, it's like everyone when they set up their pension, they go, oh, low risk, high return. That's what I want. It doesn't exist. You want high return, you're going high risk. You know, but most people will go for, I'll go somewhere in the middle. I don't want to go high risk, right?
Yeah.
But... And people who would say, and I'm not saying this is what you should do, this is not financial advice, obviously, but but what's mad is, or interesting, people with an exceptional growth mindset will go high risk easily, and they won't bat an eyelid at it. They'll go, oh, let's go the high risk. But you could lose, like, your pension. Yeah, well, I know, but I could also gain. They don't mind that, but fixed mindset can't fathom that. Why would you risk losing your money? And this is where it starts to show up when you get into things like money or career or relationship or job or outlook. But the perfectionist is the one that really fixes themselves and puts themselves in a hole. And the reason I highlight that, because it's a lot of people.
Mark is married to his childhood sweetheart, Fiona, and they live in Dublin Southside. And in this conversation, he explains what life coaching is all about. And he also shares his backstory, which led him to pursue a career in coaching. He talks about the difference between a fixed and a growth mindset, managing anxiety, changing careers, and lots more. Here it is. So let's talk life coaching. What is a life coach?
Yeah, it's a great question. So there's lots of different facets to people getting help with so forth mental health. You've got psychiatry, which is, you know, psychology. You've got therapy, counseling. You've therapists, and then you've life coaching. And it's kind of like, what is it? Well, life coaching is very much where you're at and where do you want to get to. So there is an element of goal setting, but more often than not, what I find, it's not about setting the goals the first couple of sessions. It's about, I suppose, sorting out what are the hurdles currently. And I always will start sometimes with a simple question of, are you happy? And if someone says, yeah, I'm grand, we all do it as the Irish people, you know, say, I'm grand. And I say, well, I know you're grand. Underneath that, though, are you actually happy with the way things are going? Sometimes people have thought about that. They've not thought about it, or they just have this sense of, I'm coasting. So life coach comes in and helps to kind of formulate a plan around that. Now, for me, I suppose one person called me an advanced life coach. I don't know what that kind of title means, but because I suppose I've been doing it for quite a period of time, I'd be very like, look, I've studied psychology and so forth. So I'd probably be a normal life coach. Doesn't always go down those other roads like I would have gone down, but I just have a natural interest in it. So I've kind of expanded my knowledge and I'm a learner. I love to read. I love to learn. So I do draw on other aspects to help with someone. But at the end of the day, I would be a life coach and I work with people on a personal level. And then sometimes I'll work with a business or a team or a group. I also do workshops and speak at events and different things. So life coach, it brings me a lot of places and it's quite diverse that way, which I love. But at the end of the day, it's about a person coming and saying, there's an element of my life or just something about my life that I'm not happy with. I want my life to reach its full potential. And that's when it's sometimes good to have another set of eyes that are trained like a life coach.
And then it's almost like you become that person's mentor.
Yes,
very much so. Would that be the
way? Yeah, very much so. I work a lot with mindset and around that. And I find, because I also get to speak in schools and such. And so this is what's really has fascinated me just from having my hands on the tools, so to speak, and working in the arena. I've seen, you know, young men and young women, 16, 17, 18, have the same issues and fears and concerns as someone who's 36, 37, 38. You know, and it's amazing the way what affects us sometimes in our teen years or even our formative years earlier on sticks with us for the rest of our lives. And mindset is major around that, sometimes shifting the mindset.
Yes. And unlearning.
It is, because we all have beliefs and we've got values. And sometimes people think, well, if I have a wrong belief, I just change it. No, these beliefs are ingrained in you, you know, very much from the people who would have looked after us, like parents or teachers or even our peers as we grew up. So these beliefs get established and these values really become permanent. They don't just change, but we can also have negative beliefs and wrong values or misvalues. We value something too much, like fitting in. We value that more than having, you know, a confidence in ourselves. So we start to tune into what will help me fit in rather than what will give me more confidence. So that's where I find mindset is a major part of it. And I always explain mindset is like a radio station. You know, you can get into your car and let the radio just play whatever comes on from whoever was in the car last and let it just play out. And that's what you'll tune into. That's what you'll sing along to, tap along to, etc. Or you can get in and you can change the station to something that serves you well, something that helps you or something that is encouraging you. And mindset is 24/7 radio, particularly 3 a.m. when it's keeping you up at night and your head's running through your emotions.
Great way to look at it. Yeah.
You're tuned into something, and mindset sometimes is where we need to reevaluate and retune into something that serves us a whole lot better. And they're not always obvious where we're getting it wrong. It's not always clear why or what's up with our mindset. We do sometimes need, I suppose, a professional to help. And that's where I would step in to help people, I suppose, unwind and understand or should I say, unclutter the mindset to figure out, well, this is actually one of your intrinsic motivators. And this is actually causing you a whole lot of problems.
I just keep thinking, I need Mark.
You know, I think we all need a coach. I think, like, because, and this is one of the things, it's crazy to see, like, in the world of academia, I mean, Ireland does so well with academics and, you know, with the schooling, and there's so much great things there. But as far as the life skills, there's not a huge amount. There really isn't. And then sometimes it's the Band-Aid stuff. What I mean by the Band-Aid is we're dealing with what happens when you're depressed, but we don't train enough on, well, this is what you do to maybe avoid depression or avoid anxiety. You know, we talk about anxiety a whole lot, but we don't always talk about that actually anxiety comes from a fear. And we should talk more about the fear than the anxiety. The anxiety is only a reaction. It's the fear is the problem. And a lot of people don't know that. When you say it to people, they go, you're right.
Yeah, get to the root of it.
The root cause.
So when you talk about training, because obviously, you know, you've done a lot already in your life. And, you know, I can only see that developing more and more. But the core training for life coaching is a specific type of training.
There is. Yeah, there is. There's a basic kind of, well, like, it's not basic. It does give you a lot of tools and techniques. And you can get certified and qualified, which I would have all that credentials. But to be honest with you, when you're a life coach, people come to you and they might come to you in a very broken state, you know, or they might be doing okay, but want to do better. A course doesn't cut it. You know, I think go do the course brilliantly, but you get experience and you've got to have a love for people and get knowledge. Like, don't go beyond the course is what I say, because I could rock up. I've seen life coach courses you can do in a weekend. Okay. Now, they give you like a piece of paper, but I'm like, you cannot then be responsible or even play a role in someone else's life from what you learned in the weekend from a book. I think it's fine. I'm not discouraging that. That's a starting point. But if you want to go into life coaching, you've got to love to learn. You've got to love to read. you've got to love to help people. Because when you've done 7 clients back to back, and you could have from small traumas to large traumas to situations to all sorts of stuff, you know, unless you love it, you won't show up the next day. You'll be exhausted. And it is tiring. So what I always say is, yes, start and get your certification, get your quote. You're going to learn a lot of tools around that. But the real key of a life coach is experience. Mm-hmm. That's really what makes the difference. You know, getting out there and getting experience and getting someone who is a senior life coach, or, you know, and learning from them. Because I never take it lightly. You are a major influence in someone's life, and they're paying you to be that influence. You better get it right.
Yeah. And I got the feeling from you, from the voice notes between us, that, you know, at its core, helping people gives you a lot of job satisfaction.
100%. Yeah. And it's something I learned very early on. And what happened was, so my parents were always involved in charities. They worked full time, whatever, but they did charities on the side. And they got us involved as kids, you know, to go and do this. And interesting enough, they started a youth club thing in town. And it wasn't scouts, but it was kind of like a scouty thing, you know. Mm. On a Friday night, you come along and we do a few games and whatever else. It's a bit of crack. And we were dragged along to that. And I remember I used to give out orange, right? Because McDonald's used to actually give us the, you know, the orange they used to sell. I don't know if they still do. But they had this big thing, this tub, you know, and it had a spout on the end, like a Berko boiler, right?
Oh, yeah.
But it was orange in it, right?
Yeah.
And my job was fill it up and give it to them out. So I was just handing out that. And I got talking to one or two of them, and I saw my upbringing, you know, we all have checkered upbringings, but I saw that their upbringing was so much more harsh. Like, I was not streetwise like these guys were. And I got talking to them and we got involved, and I ended up talking to a guy, and I was like, oh, what are you going to do when you're older? You know, I was like, I'm a teenager at this stage. What are you going to do when you're older? Well, if I survive beyond 21, I'll be doing better than my brother. And I said, really? Yeah, he died. And it turned out, I couldn't believe this, because I was like, wow, 21 was a few years away, but I couldn't believe that his mindset was just, I didn't call it mindset then, but his outlook was just survive. And I couldn't believe it. And I saw the value in what my parents were doing, and I got more involved than just doing the orange. I started, I want to help, I want to talk, I want to, you know, do what I can do to help these guys. And through it, I suppose it sparked in me. I started then coaching someone. I wouldn't call it coaching then, but like helping them or training them or basic skills, or, and when I say skills, just about life. And started sharing stuff like that, whatever else, stuff that I'd learned, etc. And as I progressed, and then I loved studying psychology and all that kind of stuff. So I would share bits each week, very simple stuff. But as I got older, they got older. And then I have other jobs and other business. I've always been kind of entrepreneurial, whatever. But this was the thing that gave me the job satisfaction, the fulfillment. Mm. And I worked with one guy, and I'll never forget him. And I was about 20, I think, at the time. And I remember just, because I had a heart for them. I could see, you know, these people need people. And I remember helping them through stuff. And I said, you know what, you can do whatever you want. Like, you can be the same guy, by the way, that I had that conversation. And he was kind of the leader of the pack. He was a tough guy. Like, listen, the stuff that they were around at 17, 8, oh my goodness, you couldn't fathom it. Long story short, as I'll always say, I'll try to keep it short. But what happened was, I said, but you can be anything you want to be. And I was that, I suppose, an element of naivety as well at that time. I was like, but you can be whatever you want to be. Nothing can hold you back. You know what I mean? I haven't lived life yet that hurdles do come. But I remember saying that to him and just saying, you can. And he grasped it. So results started to happen in that respect. Now, don't worry, we didn't, you know, make angels or anything overnight, but they did start to change. I fell in love with helping these people, these guys, these girls, or whatever else. And I said, I want to do this for as long as I live. And we weren't getting paid. It wasn't about the money. I just had a love for it. But what happened was, fast forward, I was in my late 20s and I'm walking into a rugby match in the RDS. And I hear a guy go, Mark Fennell, is that you? Mark? And I turned around and it was this guy. Oh, and he says, I'll never forget what you shared with me. I'll never forget what you said to me. He says, I actually went home to my ma that night and I told her, I'm not going to be like my brother. I'm not going to be dead, ma, when I'm 21. Don't you worry, ma. I'm going to look after you. And that was like, phew. He goes,
yeah, wow.
So we moved out. He says, I have a wife now and I have a kid. And he says, I have a house and everything. He says, and I said, what are you doing here? Are you watching the match? He goes, no, I'm the head of security. No better, man.
Oh, brilliant.
You know, but that for me then solidified.
You know, it's not about God, that is everything.
That was it.
I mean, I'm getting goosebumps listening to that.
That's how I got into it. And thankfully, there was a lot of stories like that that came out of that area, and that just fuels you on like no end. No money can give you that satisfaction.
So if ever you needed kind of evidence or proof that, you know, this is your path, this is what you're meant to be doing, it was there.
It was there. And there was other cases and stories over the years and whatnot. And, you know, each year I think I've heard every story, and then I see someone who you think, I hope they get this breakthrough, and then they have a breakthrough and you're like, I can't believe it. It's not anything I do. I can't take credit. I just package information in a way that they understand it.
I get you, yeah.
And they can put it into practice. I always believe this. We don't coach people. We train coaches. Should I put it like this? We train people to become their own coaches.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, you know, what's the old saying? Give a man a fish, he eats for a day. Teach him the fish, he eats for a lifetime. I believe in that.
Yeah, yeah. Great. Mm. And, you know, that's what it's about. Empowerment.
Yeah,
you know, and that's you're giving people those tools, which is brilliant.
So many people don't believe in themselves. I always say, look, we never arrive, and we shouldn't look to arrive.
Yeah.
You know, because through the growing, there is pain, but without that pain, we wouldn't grow. If we stayed in our comfort zone, nothing good would happen at all.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, we look back and we kind of think, you know, you look back at your life, and we've all gone through stuff, you know, checkered past, peaks and troughs. And you look back at some stuff and you go, I hated it at the time, but if it weren't for it, I wouldn't be as strong in that area as I am now.
Well, let's talk about that, because it hasn't always been a bed of roses for you either.
Like,
you've had your own stuff. So you did share with me that 15 years ago, you did hit a bit of a stumbling block.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, this is the thing. Like, no one has it figured out, all figured out. And I suppose, because I was in around this world of, and thankfully I was doing successful in it, but it wasn't a bed of roses. It wasn't easy. You're trying to build, you're telling people, I'm going to be a full-time coach. And people say, what's that? Is that a job? You know what I mean? How does that pay the mortgage? But, you know,
it wasn't really a thing, was it, years ago?
No,
Become part of our language in recent times.
Oh, that's what I mean. And now the term is so, life coach. It's just because, I don't know, maybe over the pandemic, I just thought everyone was becoming a life coach.
Oh, really?
I saw a lot of that, which is not bad, because you learn stuff for yourself at least. But anyway, what happened to me was, and it certainly was, I mean, look, without going into kind of childhood and teen years, or whatever else, yeah, there's been major, major stuff, but challenges or whatever else. But that's why I'm so passionate about what I do, because when I share what I share, I share with a conviction, because I've lived most of this stuff. You know what I mean? Or I've been through this stuff. You know, it wasn't a silver spoon, you know, upbringing or anything, you know, that kind of way. So we've had to graft, so to speak, to a degree. But what I said 15 years ago, I was in my 20s, and I was a victim of my success in a way, if I can even use it like that. But what happened to me was, I was burning the candle at both ends. I've been asked to speak at events. I was speaking 3 to 5 times a week, every week. And that was all year round, like, which was uncanny. Like, as a speaker, that was a huge amount of speaking in Ireland, UK. And then I was asked to go to the States, and I did a few over there, Texas and different places and whatever else. And I got to travel in a few states and speak. So that was amazing. I loved it. And it opened my eyes to different cultures, different people and all sorts. But what happened was, because being so busy, and I'm talking for a long period of time, it wasn't just like a busy month, it was a busy couple of years, like, I ended out and didn't realize that I was burning out. And I was starting to be in a constant state of anxiety, not knowing it was anxiety.
Right.
The whole anxiety side of coaching was not an area I coached in. I coached in self-belief and confidence and motivation. That was my area. So the whole side of mental health and anxiety, depression, all those other things, ruminating or OCD, all of that stuff, I had not gone down that road. I hadn't pursued that. Does that make sense? So I was focused on what I was doing. And obviously, when you're training that stuff, learning that stuff, teaching that stuff, you are pretty motivated, because that's all you're feeding yourself with. But I didn't realize I was in a high state of anxiety and didn't know. Wasn't sleeping, maybe 5 hours a night. Started to get like a knot in my stomach, chest pains, tension, headaches. And this was ongoing, but I'm a real, like, no, keep going, keep going, keep going, you know, keep it up. And what happened was, I was in the gym one morning. Well, here's actually the full story. What happened? The night before, I did an event, and it was around relationships. And after an event, a couple came to me and said, if you can't talk to us now, I don't think we're planning on filing for divorce tomorrow.
All right.
Could you talk to us? And I was like, I can't leave them. And my wife was there as well, and she's very involved in what I do. And she was like, we'll meet them for a coffee. This is at 10 o'clock at night after you've done an event. You're wrecked, right?
Okay, wow.
But I could see that they were in a need, and she was upset. And anyway, met with her and him, had a chat. It was 12 o'clock. I went home. And I wasn't saying whether I should or should not have a divorce, but after speaking to them, they said, we're going to put it on hold. So that was good. Went to bed about 12:30. But after that, you're buzzing, right? You know yourself, you do something on TV, you're buzzing after it, you know. Anyway, went to bed 12:30 or something like that. Was up at, I think it was 5:30 the next morning to go to the gym before I kicked off my sessions all day with clients. 6 o'clock, I'm in the gym. I get all faint, like stars in my eyes, you know, that kind of way. And so I thought, I need to sit down. And I had a chest pain.
Right.
First of all, I think, is this a heart attack? Next thing I know, I'm in A&E. They're treating me for a heart attack and suspected heart attack. My wife comes in to me, and we'd never gone through anything this, like, life-threatening before. It's the first time I was in this situation. So my
and
wife,
you're young, like, you're still in your 20s.
Yeah, this, like, you know, yeah. I didn't expect this. And the thoughts of, this can't be me. This can't be happening me. And I'm in the bed and, you know, with all the stickers all over me. And the wife comes in and she's no good in hospitals. So she starts to faint. So I'm holding her up.
All right. Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
She's falling against the bed, which is on wheels, in A&E. The bed starts sliding.
Stop.
Right? The stickers start popping at me. So the alarm starts going off. I'm holding her up. Well, if I wasn't having a heart attack before, I'd be having one now. So I'm trying to hold her up. She's like, I'm fine, I'm fine. And her eyes rolling in her head. And I'm like, nurse, nurse, nurse. And it was like an American show. I start going, medic, medic. We do even say that in Ireland. Right, it's like medic, medic, and they run in. They run in, and she's like a ball of jelly, and I'm holding her. And they take her out. They bring her up to two beds up, and she's getting connected up there. Amazingly, though, all of the anxiety. I learned a lesson with that.
Right.
Weirdly enough,
right.
All of the anxiety I was experiencing as I was lying there, is it my heart? Is it my life? Am I dying? Blah 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 blah. All of that stuff went out of my head because my focus became her.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I realized. And then I just was. She was up there, and then I realized. I haven't been thinking all about my heart. It's not amazing the way you can flick your thoughts so quickly. Just a loose thought went through my head. I just remember taking note of it. So, of course, we were going to, you know, I was doing sessions. I was in a shirt and whatever else. So they thought we'd just come in from a night out. And I said, no, I came from the gym. And he was like, yeah, we're going to have to do some drug tests on you and all sorts of things. Like, I'm like, no, I'm not into any of that stuff. Trust me. Because they were like, are they both off their heads?
Oh, God.
Right? So I'm like, no, we're grand. Anyway, turns out
we're workaholics.
Literally, honestly, workaholics.
Like if you were leaving at midnight and then you got like only X amount of sleep and then you were up crack of dawn gym.
Yeah, and I thought this was normal lifestyle and this is horrendous.
Okay. And this was a continual kind. This
was like this for ages.
Wow,
ages.
Okay.
So long story short, it wasn't a heart attack.
Yeah,
they kept me in, but this is where it triggered off for me. What happened? It wasn't a heart attack.
Was it a panic attack?
It was not a panic attack, an anxiety attack. So not full-blown panic where but a high anxiety. I didn't know. We didn't use the word anxiety then. I know that sounds like middle ages, but we didn't use the word anxiety.
You know,
it was, he must suffer with his nerves. You know, that's how it was put, right?
Yeah.
That word never came up. So what happened was that event passed and I went home a couple of days later. They kept me in and... One night I could feel the chest pain again and I started to get all this sensation. I now know it's anxiety, but I didn't know it was anxiety. Why am I feeling like this? Tingly hands, you know, chest pain, et cetera, et cetera. And I went into a very high anxiety. It wasn't a panic attack where I hyperventilated, but it was on the cusp of a panic attack.
Sure, yeah.
An anxiety attack, I'd call it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like this anxiety feeling. And your thoughts start running a mile a minute. I've never experienced anything like this to this point in my life that I was aware of.
Yeah.
And like, what's happened to me? What's happened to me? Is it a heart attack? Did they miss it? Did they get it wrong? Misdiagnosis, et cetera, et cetera. This triggered off in me huge anxiety. It was basic anxiety that was already there. It just got turned up by the dial got turned up on it.
Yeah.
And I became hypersensitive to how my sensations and how I'm feeling and ruminating started. Any little thing, a pain or this or that, or whatever else. And my anxiety... Put it this way, how bad it got, without giving you all the ins and outs, it got so, I lost 2 stone in weight.
All right.
I couldn't eat. I was nauseous. I had fear of going out with friends, fear of going out, all of this stuff. But I was still coaching people because it was the one thing that got my mind off me when I coach someone. I'm focused on them, not me. And
so
it gave me relief.
You could park it for that period. Yeah.
I was on stage and I remember one event, there was 1,100 people at the event and I'm on stage speaking at the event and I'm in bits with anxiety beforehand. I walk on stage, no anxiety. I come off stage, anxiety returns. And I remember going, just leave me on the stage because I'm thinking about them, not me then. Anyway, it took me, the doctor wants to put me on medication. And doctors in all their wisdom do a lot of good and medication is sometimes needed. For me, I didn't want to go down that road.
Mm.
They said talk to a therapist or a counsellor. And my knowledge of therapy and counselling was that they always go back to the inner child work and when I was a child. And I said, we all have checkered past, but I know that's not it for me. I didn't do therapy, counselling or even speak to a professional. I had this thing in my head. If I got myself into this, I should be able to learn and get myself out of this. And so this is the hard way of getting over anxiety. I went on self-discovery to be able to read on the internet about anxiety and not react with anxiety. And how I did that was I saw myself as a client of mine. I know it sounds mad. As if, so here I am, but I'm there, I am there. And I'm learning to help my client. Because if I say I'm trying to help myself, I'll just get anxious. Does that make sense?
It does.
I saw myself as my own client.
But this is really interesting.
Took 2 years.
Okay. Because horrendous. Obviously you believe in you know, getting help and for people reaching out in whatever form that is, be it life coaching or therapy. But for you, you were a little bit, I'm not going to do that. Is it because, did you want the hardship, or was it just you felt like, I can do this myself?
It wasn't a pride or ego thing. It certainly wasn't, because I was a shell of a man. Someone who thought they were bulletproof, all of a sudden now was a shell, like literally a shell. My wife was, I remember, in fear of how I was. Never saw me like that. She knows me since I was 7. So she was shocked, and everyone was. What happened? Why did I not? Because there were certain, I was knowledgeable enough of psychology to know that not every aspect or attribute of it I would agree with or work with, right? Now, that I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm not trying to cause confusion for anyone. But I knew enough where, how should I put this? I said, I know that if I can get this myself, it will change my life. But if someone tries to teach me it, I might not grasp it. I put it this way. This is me, school of hard knocks, right? Don't make it easy for myself. Bottom line is, I said, I need to learn how to fix this the hard way, as if there was no therapy.
But I find this really interesting, because at the end of the day, it's actually a really good point to make, because at the end of the day, whether we go down the therapy route or not, when it comes to really activating change, it has to come from within.
And I knew enough to know that. I just didn't know how.
So you were just going, look, I can go the therapy route. They can point things out. I can learn that way, but it's still going to come down to me.
Yeah. And I knew then try and find, you know, I knew it would always come back to me.
Yeah.
I have so many friends and psychologists and therapists, and you've got to, when you're at a loose end, you don't know where to go, turn to someone, you know, start there and figure it out. You know, you'll help to figure it out. But I knew from my coaching background, you see, this will have to come from me no matter what happens, no matter what or who I speak to, this has to come from me. And I do not advise this for everybody, because it's really difficult, and it's a race. Slow, long process, because it took 2 years just for me to get back to normal. And it's a long time, you know. And I remember feeling low, like I never felt lowness, and sleepless nights, like horrendous stuff. I'm not going through it all, but the ruminating and anxiety was constant. It became what's called generalized anxiety disorder. I was anxious for just being anxious, just anxious all the time.
And as you mentioned earlier, you know, behind anxiety, like it is with a lot of emotions, be it anger, frustration, jealousy, is at the root of it, is fear.
I identified that, you see, fairly early on.
Okay.
That was the kind of thing that helped me. And what helped me was, I said, well, remember I said about the hospital when Fiona was fainting, and I forgot about my anxiety.
Yes.
And then I'd be coaching clients and I'd forget about my anxiety. I was like, I can't always stay in anxiety, because when I put other people ahead of myself, I'm not anxious. So I said, I know that this isn't a constant, I'm, you know, hormonally anxious or medically induced anxiety where I can't get rid of it. I said, I've had windows where it wasn't there for whatever reason, distracted or whatever. So I knew this wasn't a constant. I knew it could be broken. I said, if I can just extend those constants to be a little bit more constant. And I remember, like, if you saw me read, I read, like, you know, there's an old movie called Short Circuit, and it was an old robot, and it would flick through the book and read the book. I was almost like that, reading, and like the amount of knowledge I accumulated in that time was ridiculous, like a book a week, and, you know, and there'd be psychology books and all sorts. But the reason I say that is I knew that it wasn't always constant, and I couldn't sustain it. And I even knew this. I saw my anxiety would rise and fall. It was still there, but it would peak and trough. And I said, it can't even sustain that high state of high anxiety. So when I'm in high anxiety, Mark, don't get freaked out, because I know at some point it'll turn down, because I can't remain there.
Okay, yeah.
So I knew there was hope.
So that gave you comfort, yeah.
Some comfort. No, I didn't know how yet, but I knew that gave me comfort. But that whole experience of what I went through in that 2 years changed my life forever. And what it did for my coaching and did for me and helping others, whatever. But what it did for me was, I don't suffer with anxiety now. And I haven't since then.
Wow. And also, I suppose it gives you a deep understanding and compassion for your clients who do have it, because you've been through it.
I can read their minds.
You've been through the shit.
Almost. Yeah. It's mad.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And in terms of getting to the root of the fear, if it's not too personal, if it is, absolutely don't answer. We'll move on. But did you get to the root of what was going on? Like where the anxiety was coming from?
Absolutely. How long do you have?
Okay.
What I understood was it was fear. I said anxious or anxiety is a state that we get into, but it's a state reacting to a perceived threat, right?
Yeah, okay.
The threat is only a threat because we fear it happening.
Yeah.
If I didn't fear the threat, I wouldn't react with anxiety to the threat. If I didn't fear tigers, I wouldn't get anxious if there's a tiger in the room, right? Mm. But the thing was, so I understood that. Now, this took a long... That probably took me 6 months to figure that out, right?
Yeah, but...
You know...
But when you're in it, it's very hard to see.
When you're in it, it's really hard, right? But what I understood then was that it's a fear. What's my fear? The fear was that I'm not always in control of my body. I'm not always in control of things. Oh, no, and I'm not a... And this is the funny thing is, I'm not a control freak. It's gas, right? But there were some things I considered were definite or finite or, you know, I just keep doing what I do and that's it. I never was, should I say, challenged with mortality or, you know, that, oh, you could die or something bad could happen. Or I wasn't challenged to that degree. Mm. And what was interesting was it wasn't the fear of death. That wasn't the fear, you know, the heart attack is a fear. No. The fear of what if I can't control my thoughts? Because my thoughts start running away with themselves. I'm like, why am I getting all worked up? Why does my body feel like this? I couldn't control my thoughts. I couldn't control my body. It was the fear of the fear. The fear of that state of anxiety that I was in. Now, why did I get there? Because I worked so long and burnt candle at both ends.
Yeah.
It wasn't a fear that got me anxious. It was just, you know, drink enough caffeine, you'll get to that state too.
Sure, yeah. I'm sure there'll be people listening now who'll be like, Mark is speaking my life at the moment, or the way it has been, or I've felt that too. We haven't got into the topics as such yet, but you've already touched on so much so far in this conversation. And anxiety is a huge piece.
Massive.
I mean, throughout this time, and I was saying this before we start recording, and I've mentioned this in a roundabout way a number of times through the podcast, but I would never have described myself as an anxious person.
Neither would I have.
Yeah, okay.
That's the mad thing about
it. There you go. But it can hit anyone.
Absolutely.
And I certainly have felt I have had moments, particularly I'm pregnant at the moment, and I particularly have found it over the past few months that I get a bit uptight, a bit stressed, a bit anxious in ways that I wouldn't have before. And I suppose we have to take into consideration that we are coming out the other side of a global pandemic.
Yeah.
That's kind of a big deal.
Well, say for example, right, if I sit with someone who's got anxiety and never had anxiety before or whatever else, and I work with some people who've had anxiety their whole lives, or people like me where I didn't realize I was anxious for so long until it kind of came to a head. But I'll say, well, what are you afraid of? And if you ask someone that or yourself that and go, I'm anxious, okay, grand. But what am I afraid of? Oh, I'm worked up because what if something happens this or happens that? What is it you fear?
Yeah, that's a great question.
And start there.
Yeah.
Rather than how do I deal with my anxiety, which you've got to do too. But start with the root cause. Start with the foundation. Start with the spark that ignited this thing. What are you afraid of? When you ask yourself that, you start to see things. You get great clarity around that.
Absolutely. It was one of my favorite exercises when I started doing yoga training was, you know, asking yourself these big questions like what do you have, what do you need? Exactly what you said, what are you afraid of? And then on top of that, the question which was great was, and if you weren't afraid, what would you do?
I always ask that. I did a workshop on Tuesday. I say, if you weren't afraid, what would you have done differently this week or today?
I know, and it changes everything.
It does, because we're afraid. And a lot of people, we go as far as, oh, I'm anxious because, you know, I'm pregnant, or I go back to work, or I'm anxious because of those things. And I say, but what are you afraid of? Oh, something happening. Now, the funny thing is, our first answer is not always the case of what we're actually afraid of, believe it or not.
Okay.
It yeah. normally goes beyond that. So say, for example, someone is, oh, I'm just nervous going back into the office. And I say, and I'm worked up about it. What's it going to be like? The uncertainty, unpredictability, it's different, all this kind of stuff. I say, well, what are you afraid of happening, though? Mm. Well, and that's where you start to kind of pursue it. They're afraid of the office. No, it's the office, but it's the fear of what might happen. What's the threat that you see or identify? And when you start to even do that, that can bring some kind of, I suppose, peace for people, and they start to understand what it is.
Yeah.
If there was an example, I could run it through with you. But
you're unraveling.
Yeah.
And getting to the real
nitty-gritty. Yeah, that's what I would do a lot of the time. And then, I suppose, put things back together in a way that works a whole lot better.
I would imagine you have to be, you know, to be a really good life coach, there can be a fair bit of using your intuition and your gut instinct and yeah. reading somebody.
Yeah, there is.
Asking the right questions, yes. Having the skill set, yes. The training, all the rest. But also, probably natural ability is a big part of it. As you said, you can become a life coach in a weekend. But yeah. that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to actually be a good life coach
yeah.
for somebody.
Look, people. Yeah, I mean, I think you've got to be. It's got to be. You've got to be tuned into that. Like my grandmother, God bless her. She's dead now, but like she was a life coach. She had 19 children. You know, she had
19.
Yeah,
amazing.
She had 12 survived. She had, I think, it was 5 miscarriages. 2 of them died. 3rd one had cerebral palsy. He died. Like she experienced so much loss and heart.
Much,
and her
wow.
husband died right in the middle of it.
Okay,
you know.
Her. Wow.
But she went and remarried,
yes.
and she was my life coach.
Yeah,
and that's where I think that's probably where my mum got it, I mean, whatever else. But that's where I learned it, and I she gave us perspective.
Yeah.
I think, well, if I can get through this, you can get through that. You know, that kind of way.
Yes,
I was like, you're
yeah.
right, you know. So I think sometimes when it comes to life coach, yeah, you'll probably find that you're maybe intuitive or whatever else, or you've learned it from someone, I don't know, to a degree. But you do have to have a bit of instinct, you know, and you've got to cultivate that. You're not going to be on the money straight away when you start. But over time, through experience, it comes.
And you know what? I did put it up last night on Instagram. I asked people to send yeah. in their questions to you. I said, I'm speaking to a life coach today. You know, get your questions in or topics. And there were so many reoccurring themes. Now, I think we'll get to those questions again at a later stage. But, you know, self-worth, finding purpose, they
yeah.
were big ones that came up.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've kind of spoken the whole way along about, I suppose, trusting your instinct and, you know, realizing that you were on the right path.
Yeah.
And even though you've done other jobs and you've you know, you are an entrepreneur. This really is where it was at for you.
Yeah, I mean, people ask me how long I'm coaching. Well, I started helping people, you know, when I was a teenager, but I wouldn't call myself a coach back then. But doing it professionally, you know, it's well over 15 years. It's probably not far off 18. But I was into it about 3 years, and that's when I had the whole anxiety thing. And that kind of took my coaching to a new level. I realized, see, what it taught me was you read so much, and this is, I'm going to put it out as a, I say this to everybody. You read so much stuff online, you know, this is how you deal with anxiety, this is how you do it, whatever else. And a lot of that stuff is simple and practical, and that's nice.
Yeah.
But it's not always, it's sometimes very fluffy. It's sometimes very like, oh, if it's just 3 steps, we're all sorted. It's not always the situation.
No.
You've got to find what it is for you. And, you know, the band-aid stuff like, oh, 5 things, if you do these 10 things, drink more water, less caffeine, meditate more, good sleep and exercise, you'll be grand. We should be doing those things, and they are true. But it can be a whole lot deeper than that in your psychology, your
yeah.
cognitive skills. You know, you've got to work on what you're thinking, because everything starts with a thought. Very much so. Unless it's hormonal, or unless it's induced by caffeine or, you know, drugs or whatever else. But generally speaking, the majority of people, their anxiety has started at some point with a thought.
Mm.
Some thought got in, fear latched on, emotional reaction gave it hold, put it under the magnifying glass. That became all they could think about. The ruminating began, and the body, of course, gets into a state of anxiety.
Yeah, yeah. So a lot of people also asking about kind of feeling a bit bored and stuck in their careers during
yeah.
this time.
Yeah.
And I suppose it's changed so much for people. A lot of people have been working from home, are now kind of getting back into the workplace. And you already mentioned it. There can be a sense of fear about what's that going to look like. But for people who are maybe going back to the drawing board going, you know, do I really want to be doing this anymore?
Yeah. A lot of people got that question over lockdown.
Yes.
It's a good question. I get asked it.
And it can be scary to make changes. Always scary.
It is. Because it's uncertain, yeah. and we love to have all the ducks in a row and have it all figured out, and then it's grand. But you add a bit of uncertainty into that, and now we're not so sure. Do we want to take that step? You know, I always believe that, you know, when you're doing well, everyone's around. But when you're not doing as well, where is everyone? You know, that kind of way.
Yeah.
You need your, and you'll know who your support system is, and it's that support system when you're not doing as well, or you need help, or you know, who could I call at 10 o'clock at night if I was struggling. It's that support system that you want to draw near to if you're making a significant change. You know, it's go with your gut, trust your instinct, but have the right support. If, for example, you want to start a business, and I'll answer your question in detail in a second, but if you want to start a business, don't get around people who haven't started a business. Get around people who have started a business. Sounds so simple, but you'll get around people who'll say, oh, listen, oh, working for yourself, very stressful, you know, da, da, da. And then you'll get around people who are like, oh, that sounds great. Yeah, working for yourself, your own hours. No, even your work for yourself or not, you'll always be working for something, as in, you know, pay bills. And the responsibility doesn't go away because you work for yourself. In fact, it increases.
Yeah, yeah.
So you got to be, you know, yourself, you got to be multifaceted, right?
Yeah.
I'm now the accountant, you know, the marketing department, the HR department, and sure, HR is closed when you're self-employed. There's no one there looking
after
you.
Three of us in this room know all about that. Yeah.
But what I mean by that is, if you're looking to make change, you've got to look at the right sources of support to make that change. I always say that at the start, because when you have an idea that's kind of just, you know, just beginning, just you're incubating this idea, and then you share it with the wrong person, they might say, oh, I'd never do that. You must be joking. And that shoots your idea right down. But it could have been a great idea.
Yeah.
Be careful who you bring your ideas to. Because they might be jealous, or they wanted to do it themselves and couldn't, so they don't want to see someone else do it, because that would remind them of their failure. You know, so you got to be careful where you bring your ideas to, and have a support system before you make any move, a support system that genuinely supports you, like it's 10 o'clock at night and no one else is around. You see, everyone supports you when it's your birthday and it's free drink at the bar. They're all there.
Yeah.
But when it's not that way. So that would be my first little always a warning or red flag. But what I would say, if you're making that change, I always ask, what's the reason for the change? What do you think the change is going to bring you? How are you going to feel if you make that change? You see, and if
can there be a little bit of the grass is always greener with people?
There can be. Yeah,
okay,
there can be.
Yeah.
I had one person I worked with, a client, and they hated their job. And they wanted to go, I'm going to go self-employed because that's what I need to do, where I get appreciated. And, you know, because I'm not appreciated where I am. And it turned out appreciation was really what they chased. And I said, when you're self-employed, no one's going to appreciate you.
Yeah.
You are the CEO now.
Yeah.
There's no one to look to and go, am I doing well? You know, unless maybe your wife or something, I don't know. But my point was, figure out what is what we would call your intrinsic motivation. What is your internal motivator? Not the external. Money's not a motivator. You know, people think it is. No, money is a tool to get something, to make you feel a certain way. You know, two people, like, for example.
No, it's nice. Let's be honest.
No, listen, absolutely. It's not a bad thing.
But I hear you.
You know, it's not a bad thing.
It can be the reason why you go after something.
Here's what's interesting, right? Sometimes people who are starting out or whatever else, they think people with money, rich people, are evil. Have you ever met people like that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they're all full of themselves. Oh, look at her with the handbag and the car. Do you ever see that?
Yeah, that's
a mindset in itself. That's a very fixed mindset. And that's a wrong mindset.
Yeah, where does that come from?
Oh, that's a fixed mindset.
I hate saying it because I know we're brilliant as a people, but is it an Irish thing?
Not only in Ireland. No, you'd see it in without picking out countries, but you would see it. Otherwise, I'd be very aware of it in some other countries too.
All right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but it's again, it's not a general thing, but it's not everybody. But yeah, you do see it where people put it this way: the mindset is people with money are evil, are bad, are full of themselves.
Full of themselves,
right.
The one I keep hearing.
Oh, listen,
but it's
notions.
It's like that thing of, you know, the house in the hill, isn't it? They always say it's the, you know, it's one person, and they kind of use the example of an American who will look at the house in the hill going, that's aspirational. I want to be that guy.
Yeah.
I want to live in that house someday.
Yeah. Growth mindset. You
know? Yeah. Okay. And the other one is like,
They think they're great. Yeah. They think they're great. The reason
so this
they do
is the difference
that.
Between the growth and fixed mindset.
When it comes to financial viewing, yeah.
Okay,
yeah. Because you could be a growth mindset financially and in your business, but very fixed with your relationship. And people don't always.
Oh, right.
Yeah, you could be very fixed in how you think a relationship should be. You know, and you know, you could be like modern day entrepreneurial with your business, but 1940s in your head and how a relationship could be fixed.
So they can
coexist. People think, oh, he's entrepreneur. He or she is growth in every aspect. No, you can have growth in some areas and very fixed in others.
Oh, that's fascinating.
It is fascinating. I love it when you get
into
it.
Didn't know that now. I would have assumed that if you are that way inclined, that it'll filter into other areas of your life. So that's
here. I'll give you an example. I worked with a guy, ran a business, very successful business, over 100 employees, very, very aspirational, very positive, very encouraged, very charismatic. Right?
Yeah.
His wife wanted to start a business. No way.
All right. Okay.
And when we got under the bonnet of what that really was about, he goes, I don't want a professional environment at home. He said, I want my wife to look after my kids. That was me and him telling me. And I said, don't tell her this because she's not going to be like, she won't be too happy to hear it. But that was what he said. So I was like, some might even call it, that's kind of repressive to your wife, not letting her start her own business. Yeah, it's like, what? Yeah. Like, who are you? But in work, this man was all things to all people. You know, he was amazing, charismatic and growth. But at home, he didn't want the wife to be that way.
Or was he insecure amazing. That she'd do better than him?
She didn't know. Here's what it was. He had two lives. He had his work life.
Yeah.
And he wanted his home life in a very way. Now, he's under high pressure, high stress, et cetera, but he loved what he did. But he wanted his home life a certain way. The wife looks after the kids. He came from that kind of background from his family. We delved into it, obviously, from his background. And that was how. And I said, do you understand? That's a kind of an old school repressive way. Like, where are we talking?
Yeah.
But yet I said, you're so growth over here. But I said, where's the growth at home? Now, that was where we began when I was working with him. Okay. I ended up working with him and his company or whatever. But the good news is he eventually changed that whole mindset. He saw the birds from the trees and says, oh my goodness, he says, I'm actually taking away her. What I said to him was, you're taking away your wife's potential.
Yeah.
You're actually putting the hurdle in her way is actually you, dude. Yeah. And when he saw that, it kind of broke his heart. He didn't realize that that was wrong. He thought that was right.
He wasn't a bad guy. He was just...
No, he wasn't a bad guy.
Conditioned to think this was
fixed
normal.
Mindset, you see. Fixed doesn't mindset. Mean if you're fixed, it's not that you're wrong. Or sorry, it's not that you're a negative or a bad person. It's just that's what you... Your beliefs, your values, you're fixed on them.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Really is. Mm-hmm. Really is.
When you get under the bonnet of any human being, like we all need it. I have to do it myself. Like, you know, now my wife, she's my coach almost. But I've seen fixed in my head. Like, no one is perfect. No one has it all put together. But I've seen fixed mindset come up in my, you know, life.
Absolutely. I have too. I'm listening to you going...
I'm very like this about that. And I'm like, that's so, you know, mad. You know, and it could be whatever. Now, in his situation, it was relationship was fixed and business was growth. But I've seen that with taking chances or different things over the years where my wife would be more growth and I'd be more fixed. And I'd be quite entrepreneurial. But she would, you know, it's when you get under the bonnet and you really get into nitty gritty, right? I mean, I'm talking, you know, the algorithms of things in our heads. You can realize, man, yeah, actually, I identify that in myself. Mm. Here's an interesting question, right?
Yeah.
It was a study they did. They got kids to do a jigsaw. And the kids were, I think, 6 years old. And what they did was they gave them the jigsaw. And then they came along and says, right, now we have a more harder jigsaw, or do you want to do the same jigsaw again? Some kids said, oh, give me the harder one. And some kids went, give me the same one I just did. That's fixed mindset. Because they could now predict the outcome. I knew how to do it.
Okay.
Fast forward, the same study done. They're in college. They said, you can do this college, you get this degree in 2 years through your language, or you can do it in 3 years and learn English at the same time. So they're doing the course in not their native tongue. Mm. Fixed mindset all went for 2 years. Growth mindset went for the 3 years. The harder challenge.
Yeah.
Okay. Fast forward 5 years on, and they revisited where people were in their careers. Who do you think was doing the better in the career? The growth mindset. Because challenge wasn't negative. Failure wasn't bad. And we all think that. The perfectionist, failure is bad. We could get in this kind of thing. So I don't have to go off on this.
No, this is brilliant. Stay with us.
So what we do is, right, the perfectionist kind of lives in a lot of us, right? Mm. You know, and it's either perfect or it's a fail. It's like what we call in psychology, it's called the term black and white thinking.
Yeah, rather than the middle ground.
So there's no middle. It's either right or it's wrong. Or if it's right, you'll find what's wrong. You know, so we have that. And to avoid failure or getting it wrong, we will go with the sure bet. You know, it's like everyone when they set up their pension, they go, oh, low risk, high return. That's what I want. It doesn't exist. You want high return, you're going high risk. You know, but most people will go for, I'll go somewhere in the middle. I don't want to go high risk, right?
Yeah.
But, and people who would say, and I'm not saying this is what you should do. This is not financial advice, obviously. But but what's mad is, or interesting, people with an exceptional growth mindset will go high risk easily. And they won't bat an eyelid at it. They'll go, oh, let's go the high risk. But you could lose like your pension. Yeah, well, I know, but I could also gain. They don't mind that, but fixed mindset can't fathom that. Why would you risk losing your money? And this is where it starts to show up when you get into things like money or career or relationship or job or outlook. But the perfectionist is the one that really fixes themselves and puts themselves in a hole. And the reason I highlight that, because it's a lot of people.
Yeah. And it's something that, you know, when you're speaking there, I'm thinking of people I've heard speak on stages where, you know, entrepreneurs or people who have achieved unbelievable career highs. They've also had so many tales of when it didn't go to plan.
Yeah.
Because they just went, get up and go at it again.
You know,
try again.
Like Steve Jobs, right? Now, I wouldn't have liked to work for him, in fairness to him, but God bless him. But he shared his story. It was an amazing speech. And he said, you know what? He said, he dropped out of college after 6 months, but he hung around the college and started doing different courses in the college, just random ones because he could, right?
Yeah.
And his parents put him through this college. It cost him a fortune. So he didn't want to quit college altogether. And he goes, I went to one course because I wanted to learn things I could never even fathom or didn't even know if I'd enjoy them. And he went to a calligraphy course, right? This is in his book.
Right.
Calligraphy, right? He said, and he gave this speech many years later. And he said, what I learned from that calligraphy course, he said, I wouldn't have learned if I stayed in the course I was in. But he said, one of the things I took from the calligraphy course was beautiful fonts, nice spacing, and just neatness and cleanliness and the beauty in neatness and straight lines and so forth. He said, what I learned in that calligraphy course, I took to the first Mac through texting and how the text would appear on the screen. This is way back in the day now.
Yeah, yeah.
And he says, I took what I learned from the calligraphy of the neatness and the spacing and so forth to the Mac. He said, that would become a fundamental in our DNA of Apple. The neatness, the slimness, and the key, and the beautiful lines. He said, and the beautiful art that it is. He said, I learned that from a calligraphy class that I attended twice.
Right, well, there you
he
go.
Said, but he said, I was a dropout. But yet, if it weren't for that dropout, I wouldn't have gone to that class. And who knows how the impact it would have had on Mac. Interesting, yes. Right?
And again, the perspective. Learning, absolutely. Constantly learning. And
yeah, learning. You see, we love learning when it's safe.
Yeah.
But we don't want to go, you could learn this, but you know, deep end. But you're going to you might... you know, nearly drowned through learning how to swim in the deep end. You know, oh, well, I learned how to swim the shallow end. We all want safe and certainty. But the deep end stuff is where you learn the most valuable lessons. From my anxiety, that was it.
Oh, absolutely. And look, in my own way and different stuff for me, absolutely. When you're in it, you don't want to be in it.
Of course you don't.
No, and you'd never ask for a challenge like it.
I wanted out of my skin.
Yeah.
When I had anxiety. I was like, how do I escape my head? I can't.
Yeah.
I Googled one time, my darkest moment, I Googled signs I'm going insane.
All right, okay.
Now, you can imagine the emotional state I was in at that point.
Yeah.
And
oh, God, yeah.
The first line, it was ironic. I came across a guy who I've stayed in touch with since. He wrote this blog. He says, well, first thing he says, if you're Googling, am I going insane? Because he wrote this article. He says, I wrote this article because a lot of people search this, funny enough. I thought that was scary. But he
right,
said,
okay.
If you're Googling this, you're clearly not insane because insane people don't know they're going insane.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh, crap, I'm not insane. But anyway, that was a dark day, but I learned a lesson, you know, but it's scary how many people when you get afraid of your own thoughts, your own mind, and I was, what do you do? You know, and that's why people, even with depression, that's why people get so depressed because the problem is between their ears and they don't know how to get away from it. And they look at lots of ways to, you know, escape that pain. That's why people self-harm, to escape what they're thinking about, to distract them for that moment.
Yeah.
It's not about that they don't want to hurt themselves, but they rather hurt themselves and experience that pain than the pain they have inside.
Yeah.
And that's a major motivation or passion of mine because I've been there. I know how bad that was. I didn't self-harm now or anything, but what I mean is I know what it's like to have the pain inside that you can't run from. It's you. It's in you. And it's that fear that's consumed you.
Yeah.
And so when I meet people now, I suppose I can relate because I was there once. Now, don't get me wrong. I say I haven't had anxiety since. I've had normal anxiety. Like, you know, you're going here, you get those anxious nerves, normal stuff. But it has never impacted on my quality of life ever since that time, you know.
Okay. I think that's a great point to leave this conversation. You've covered so much. And I know there'll be people listening who will be, you know, wanting to contact you.
Yeah.
So if they want to, how can they make contact?
Of course. Well, look, Instagram and the website. The Instagram is markfennell.ie. It's two N's and two L's. That's the user handle. And then just the website's the same. It's markfennell.ie. You know, and look, get in touch and whatever have you. But don't stay where you are if you're not happy where you are. You know, you don't have to remain there.
Mm.
So yeah, get in touch. Absolutely. And thanks for having me on.
Really good message. Well, you're going to come back.
Absolutely.
You're going to come back and we are going to have another conversation that tackles other topics and then listener questions as well that were sent in on Instagram. So looking forward to that. Thanks a million.
Thank you.
If you like this conversation, please let me know by leaving a rating or a little comment on Apple. It only takes a minute, I promise. You can also click follow on Spotify, or you could share it with pals on social media. You've been listening to Ready to Be Real Conversations.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.